Blog Talk Radio.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking, come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball and die. My.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let your hair down, Frank. Sing it, baby. Oh, James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio. Blogtalkradio.com. That's where you go. And we've got the link all over Facebook and a lot of different places that me and Mark spread our podcasting seed, as it were. And you can find it. We do this live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We have a recorded version of the program that rolls out Sundays at 4 p.m. on Mojo 5.0 Radio, mojo50.com. The way they have it set there, you can listen to the programs as they're being broadcast according to the broadcast schedule for the website. And if you don't want to go to the website, you want to use your device, there is an app for iHeartRadio. Mojo has an iHeartRadio app, so you can use that as well. And you can listen to them as they're being broadcast, or you can just scroll down through and pick up whatever show, ACP, as it were, you know, whatever show you want to hear. And they've got some awesome stuff, man, some awesome stuff. As a matter of fact, these guys are so good, I'm starting to get a little bit of a complex being over there. We'll have to step it up, I guess, and that's what we'll do. You know, we've been talking for a long time about a couple of different things. We've been talking about the border, not so much here lately, but that's been a big story because it is a genuine problem. It is an existential threat to the nation's national security. And we've also been talking a great deal about the unbelievably, epically anticlimactic Mueller report. The president, you know, has been telling us this whole thing is a circle jerk. I haven't done anything wrong. It's a witch hunt. And by God, if he wasn't right, it was. It was nothing but a circle jerk. It's still a concentric ringed circle jerk now, because the Democrats couldn't get over the fact that they couldn't win the rigged election. They lost the election that they rigged. How do you do that? How in the hell do you do that? I don't know, but they did. And so they lose the election. They can't understand it because, you know, it was Hillary Clinton, the most dislikable, most untrustworthy candidate in the history of presidential candidates. So they lose. And they gin up this whole collusion deal. And we've been talking about it a lot because it's a huge story. Okay, maybe it's not Kennedy assassination huge, but it's pretty big, because the facts are becoming more and more undeniable that this was a coup. This was an attempted coup d'etat. There were a number of people throughout high positions in government that actively, willingly conspired to do what they could to disrupt the political authority, in other words, elections, that we have. They tried to disrupt the citizens' authority. They conspired against us, you and I. You dig? To disrupt our place in this process. Think about that. Yeah, put down your craft brew for just a minute and think about what I just said there. Turn down the Seven Dust album. See how woke you are to that. Because when you look at it, and we say treason, I say treason, but I don't know what else you call that. They were actively seeking to overthrow a legitimately elected government in the form of Donald Trump. We understand our foreign enemies. You know, in the old days, it was the Nazis, it was imperialist Japan. Later, it was the communists, it still is. Islam. Those are our foreign enemies. We can kind of pin down where they're at, you know. But we are so quick to discount and dismiss the concept of domestic enemies. When great nations fall, it is rarely due to the enemy outside the gate, but rather the ones here among us. Hydra. And you know what I'm talking about. Everybody else calls it the deep state. I call it Hydra. And we live in a time when it is conceivable that we may see a restoration of the rule of law. We may see a reckoning, a vanquishing of these traitors, these conspirators. It's a possibility. I like to think that it could happen. Maybe it will. Gerald Nadler has been raising up 14 kinds of holy hell. And it's Jerry the Jowl. He's the Democrat chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Yankee out of New York, big fat tub of goo, empty headed. He's been in Washington for 30 years and is a massive part of the problem that he claims he's trying to fix. He's corrupt and a partisan political hack. But that's how it works in the House of Representatives. The party in power, in this case, in this election cycle, it's the Democrats. They get to chair all the big committees. And so the Judiciary Committee is a pretty decent-sized gun, and they've been taking pot shots at the administration for a long time. Excuse me. So, I'm sorry about that. Usually I hit the cough button, but that one snuck up on me. The pollen this time of year is just wearing me out. So, he's going crazy. He wants to see the report, but he doesn't want to see the redacted report. He doesn't want to see the special discount Jerry Nadler special redacted report. He doesn't even want to carry his fat ass over to a secure room, a clean room, and look at the unredacted thing. Doesn't want to do any of that. Can't be bothered with that. Can't be bothered with hadn't even, well, they were supposed to have read the report as a gesture of grief. I can't even remember where it was, but they were supposed to, all of them were supposed to read. They were all going to take turns reading the report to an empty room because that's what's important, man. So that's what they're doing or have done. But they're subpoenaing everybody inside. And one of the people that they want to talk to is a guy named Don McGahn. And Don McGahn is President Trump's, he's one of his counsels, one of his guys that he can talk to. And, you know, they want the unredacted report and all the underlying materials. Because why? Well, nobody knows. But he's demanded the report unredacted, which is impossible for the attorney general to do because there is certain information within the report that is involved pending grand jury investigations. And it can't be revealed yet due to these grand jury investigations. Nadler says, hey, we don't care. I am Jerry the Jowl Nadler. You break the law for me, Mr. Attorney General. And the Attorney General says, no, we're not going to do that. That's crazy. And no. So they go and they hold the Attorney General in contempt. Doug Collins, and that's where we're going with this. Doug Collins wore him out. I played the clip on that. And Doug Collins is the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. So at the ranking Republican, that is. And Gerald Nadler, the Democrat, Jerry the Jowl, he's the chairman. And he wore these guys out on holding the Attorney General in contempt because he wouldn't comply with their egregious demands. He would not break the law for them. Well, they're still grumbling about that, and we'll see, you know, what's going to happen, because we'll be back, and we're going to get you and your little dog, too. And so then now they've moved on, and they want to talk. They want to subpoena Don McGahn, and they want to talk to him about, honestly, who the hell knows. They want to bring the dude up, and they want to whip on him, and these guys want to take their 5 minutes and, you know, castigate this guy, because they're all probably thinking about running for president. There's like 24 people in the ring in the Democrat committee, and every single one of them trying to out left, to out commie the other one, to out socialism the next guy. It's just this mad dash for the left. Excuse me. So they subpoena Don McGahn. The president says, Don, don't pay any attention to these fools. We have things to do, and fooling with those cats is not one of them. So let's get to the work. So he ignores it. So they're going to hold Don McGahn in contempt, is where we're going next. And Doug Collins is what I'm leading up to in this clip, lays them out again. Now, he's a relatively young guy, Doug Collins, and he's a representative, he's a Republican representative from Georgia. But he's been around long enough to have established a pretty solid donor base, because that's how you get on committees. You represent the Republicans, and they say, oh, man, he's a money guy. He's going to be good for our coffers. We want to hold on to him. Let's get him this, you know, let's do this. And so this guy is, the ranking Republican member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's pretty high up on the food chain in the legislatures, in the Senate, and the, well, Congress. And he seems to be cut from the same bolt that Mark Meadows is, that Devin Nunes is, that Trey Gowdy was. And at this point in his career, he is still dedicated to what is best for the citizens of this country and protecting the Constitution. Here's what he had to say again, and he takes him to task. And bear in mind, everything that he's saying is being absorbed by this incredibly fat man that's about 3 feet over Representative Collins' right. And Nadler is the chairman of this committee. And throughout the video, just picture it, Representative Collins is saying his piece. And the chairman of the committee, sitting in his big fat chairman seat, his big fat chairman face, pointed down at his big fat chairman desk with his big fat hand, holding his big fat head down. Just absolutely nothing to say. He knows that every word Representative Collins is speaking has the indisputable ring of truth, and there's nothing he can do about it because Representative Collins has the right. That's how it works. Here's what he had to say. Terrific stuff.
Georgia, Mr. Collins, for his opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for all that have gathered here again. Here we go again. The theater is open, and the summations are coming in. In fact, right now we're again running over the norms of congressional oversight. We're dabbing at the edges of rubbing roughshod on the Constitution, asking for things that we don't. But I am glad about one thing. I'm glad that the chairman read into the record today the Mueller report. I'm glad that he quoted, as he said, this is a quote directly from the Mueller report. I just wish my chairman would actually go read the rest of it that he has been offered to read, which he has chose not to read. But he did leave out one thing. He left out something in the Mueller report from just now. He read McGahn's testimony beautifully, did everything right, but he left out what he doesn't want to have to come back to, and the frustrating thing that has brought us here again and again and again, and that is the conclusions. There was no collusion. There was no obstruction charge. There's nothing here. After 2 years of doing this, we can read it in. You can talk about how you don't like it. You can talk about what you would like to ask. But at the end of the day, it's interesting. We'll read in the quotes that make the headlines, but we're also not going to read in the bottom line of what was actually concluded. So the Democrats are here trying again. The Mueller report concluded there was no collusion, no obstruction, because the report failed to provide damning information against the president. The majority claims we need to dig deeper. Deeper than the 2 years of investigation conducted by what is considered a prosecutorial dream team, because that probe ended without criminal charges against the president or his family. The special counsel closed up shop without giving Democrats anything to deliver to their base. Now the Democrats are trying desperately to make something out of nothing, which is why the chairman has, again, haphazardly subpoenaed today's witnesses. That move, though, has actually ensured the witness will not testify. You know, this is becoming a pattern. The chairman knew this, I believe, when he sent the subpoena last month, but instead of inviting the witness to testify voluntarily and working with McGahn's counsel to find mutual agreeable time and scope for the testimony, the chairman rushed to maximize headlines by issuing a subpoena. That subpoena was the third in just 4 months, more subpoenas than the prior chairman issued in 6 years. The chairman had several ways out here. He took none of them. The chairman could have invited the witness to testify voluntarily. That was the practice in the 1990s when the White House counsel testified before Congress, but the chairman did not do that. Instead, he launched a subpoena at the witness without any consultation or follow-up with the witness's lawyer. The chairman could have invited the witness to testify behind closed doors, but that would have been politically expedient, and you wouldn't have been here, and the show would not have been as exciting. A closed-door conversation would not have generated those headlines and everything that we're looking at today, even gaveling in today's hearing without a witness's theatrical. The cameras love a spectacle, and the majority loves the chance to rant against the administration. I just am glad today to see that we don't have chicken on the dais. The chairman orchestrated today's confrontation when he could have avoided it because he's more interested in the fight than fact-finding. Take the Mueller report, which we've already heard quoted from. More than 99% of the Justice Department has offered to the chairman. For an entire month, the chairman has refused to take a look at it. The Attorney General, who volunteered to testify before the committee, the chairman changed the rules for the first time in the committee's 200-year history, thus blocking General Barr from testifying. I cannot emphasize this enough. The track record demonstrates he does not actually want information. He wants the fight, but not the truth. The closer he actually comes to obtaining information, the further we run from it. The Democrats claim the need today's witness to investigate obstruction of justice, but that investigation was already done. Robert Mueller spent 2 years running it and then closed it. We are not a prosecutorial body, but a legislative body that does have valid congressional oversight. But let's talk about that Mueller report for just a second. It's really interesting to me that the Mueller report was actually, within 24 hours of coming out, the chairman and the majority subpoenaed for all the documents. In fact, we have an illegal subpoena that asks the attorney general to provide documents he cannot legally provide. That's been covered in this committee for the last 2 weeks exhaustively, and even the panel that was with us last week agreed that the subpoena asked the Attorney General to do something illegal by exposing 6E information. That was his own witnesses said that last week. But you know what's interesting to me is that we've subpoenaed the documents, we've subpoenaed that we want underlying documents, we've subpoenaed stuff that we can't get, but you know the one thing that we seem to avoid is Mr. Mueller himself, the one who wrote it. We've asked since April about Mr. Mueller coming. But every time we seem to get close to Mueller, Mueller just gets pushed on a little bit. Hadn't seen a subpoena here, and this is what's really amazing. We'll get back to subpoenas in a moment, but just think about that. You wanted the work of the author, but you don't want to talk to the author. Keep that penned for just a moment. When we look at this, 99% of the information is at the Democrats' fingertips, and it's the Mueller report Attorney General offered to Speaker Pelosi, Chairman Allen, and others have seen it, but they refuse. So don't be fooled. Majority wants the fight. They want the drama. He does not actually want the information he claims to be seeking. After the administration made volumes of information available to this committee, the chairman issued overbroad subpoenas and now harangues the administration for being unable to comply with those subpoenas. In fact, it's the Democrats who are not engaging in an accommodation process, abruptly cutting off negotiations and rejecting olive branches by the administration. This is where I want to come back to something my chairman just said a moment ago. His quote was, in his opening statement, that our subpoenas are not optional. Well, we found out a lot about subpoenas over the last month or so in this committee. I found out that subpoenas maybe now are not optional. Let's add to the list. Subpoenas are also a discussion starter. A subpoena is to give us better standing in court. Not my quotes, the chairman's quotes. So what is it? is a subpoena the legal document that we've talked about all along in here and the forceful document that all attorneys in this country actually use? Or is it a discussion starter? Is it to help our standing in court? Or is it we don't want it ignored? At this time, it is amazing to me that the accommodation process, and we talk about the committee, and the chairman forcefully talked about our oversight. I agree with the chairman on this point. This committee and all committees in Congress have oversight responsibilities, but it is also the sacred responsibility of the chairman and the majority to use it properly. And to not...
Okay. He goes on, but we're not going to. That was enough. Now... A lot of key words here that he used that were woven throughout that thread. Show. Theatrical. Drama. Now we may as well go ahead. You know, we may as well go ahead and add sound and fury, signifying nothing. We've talked about this a bunch, and a lot of this stuff, it's just posturing. It's theater. It's like roller derby. It's like wrestling, which is kind of really an insert. You know, it's an insult to wrestlers and roller derby babes, but you get the idea. So why won't they talk to Mueller? That's the question. That's the question. Why won't they talk to Mueller? He could come in there, and I'll bet within a matter of hours, maybe 2 days worth of testimony, maybe 2 days worth of testimony. And whatever questions they had, he could clear up. But they don't want to talk to him. Now, there could be a couple of reasons why they don't want to talk to him. Maybe they don't want to talk to him because they know he really... excuse me, didn't have a whole lot to do with this. Yeah, it's the Mueller report, and Mueller was the special counsel, and blah, 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 yakety schmackety. But there was also a guy on his team named Andrew Weissman, and you can look him up. Weissman and Mueller have a long history. He's Mueller's attack dog. He's a dirty player, and the thinking is, based on a lot of the places that I go to look for stuff, the conventional thinking is that this is Weissman's operation that Mueller rubber stamps, and that's just how these guys work. But they don't want to talk to Weissman. They don't want to talk to the handlers of Bob Mueller from this investigation. They would want to talk to Bob Mueller. They wouldn't have any reason to talk to these other guys. Again, he's the head. This is his report. This was his investigation. Why would I care about what Andrew Weissman says concerning the Mueller report? Bring Mr. Mueller in. And maybe the Democrats know that they can't talk to Bob Mueller, because if they talk to Bob Mueller, then everybody on the planet is going to know what the rest of us already know. And that is, you know, it was a put-up job. There's nothing there. There never was anything there. How could there be anything there when the evidence that was introduced to suggest that there was something there was never real to start out with? It's all product. So what's Mueller going to tell him? So, no, they don't want to talk to Mueller. They want the unredacted copy of the report. They want the underlying documents, the reference materials for a do-over so they can drag this out into 2020. Pretty much as I've drugged this out to the bottom of the hour, which is where we're at. And we're going to take a little break. We will be back as I scroll frantically through my list here. We will be back with more of ACP right after this, as soon as I find something. We're getting close. Okay.
Ain't got a dime to my name, what a terrible shame. Ho hum, ho ho hum. Just found a hole in my shoe when my stocking shows through. Ho hum, ho ho hum. I know that when you're as free as a bird in a tree, life is a wonderful whim. Look at the crank with his dough in the bank. Don't you feel sorry for him? Rolling along at a loss, never gathering moss. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 hum. Terrific success, I ought to worry, I guess. Ho, 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 ho. I like a shady old tree. What's the matter with me? Ho, 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 ho. There's nothing quite as grotesque as a man at a desk looking outside at the sun. Shirts made of silk and a diet of milk. Maybe he thinks he has fun. I've got the vagabond itch. I guess I'll never get rich. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho.
When Madame Pompadour was on a ballroom floor, said all the gentlemen, obviously, the madam has the cutest personality. And think of all the books about Du Barry's looks. What was it made of? A toast of Paris. She had a well-developed personality.
What did Romeo see in Juliet, or Pierrot in Pierrette, or Jupiter in Juno?
You know. And when Salome danced and had the boys entranced, no doubt it must have been easy to see that she knew how to use her personality.
education well, and never sit on a bus or settee. Unless she's got a perfect personality. A girl can get somewhere in spite of stringy hair, or even just a bit bored at the knee. If she can show a faultless personality.
Why are certain girls offered certain things, like sable coats and wedding rings, by men who wear their spats right?
That's right. So don't you say I'm smart and have the kindest heart. Oh, what a wonderful sister I'd be.
Just tell me how you like my
personality.
Baby, you've got the cutest
personality.
We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Yeah, you got that right. I bet there's probably 6-8 people out there tuned in. And it's awesome to have each and every one of you. Let me tell you that right now. James Bostic, Conservative's Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network at blogtalkradio.com. Blogtalkradio.com. Go there, type in Patriot Nation. ACP is here live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Mojo 5.0 Radio. Mojo50.com. Go there and check it out. They also have an iHeart app as well. Great stuff out there at Mojo. Okay, back to the bug. Comrade Brennan, j'accuse. Treason? Why not call it treason? What else can you call it? Talk about tonight. Here's what's going to go down. There was a domestic prong. There were multiple branches to this operation, this coup. And two large branches, which contained a lot of smaller tributaries and cross branches and little things like that. There was a domestic branch, which would have been the FBI, because the FBI handles domestic intelligence. You know, they were created to root out communism, subversives, socialists, the Reds, the Nazis during the war, organized crime guys, big stuff. And in order to do that, they had to have an intelligence capability to gather, to disseminate. And they did. And they did. So you had the FBI in the vanguard of this operation in the form of James Comey, because he's the front man. And then you had a foreign branch outside the United States. There was a branch of this operation, because they weren't investigating anything, people. There wasn't anything to investigate. These were the carpenters setting up the frame around this president and the administration. So in government, in American government, you know, we say, you know, the FBI handles this sort of thing, the counterterrorism, the counterintelligence kind of stuff inside the United States. Outside the borders of the United States, these type of operations come under the purview of the Central Intelligence Agency or the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Now, at the time that they were cooking up this rhubarb, James Comey was running the FBI, the domestic branch of this operation. But for the contingencies and the times and the potential opportunities of Trump campaign members or key Trump family members or personnel going outside the United States, we had to have assets in place. So the FBI turned to the CIA, and the CIA at this time was under the leadership of John Brennan. Funny story about Thursday's show concerning this. So you have James Comey, the FBI. You have John Brennan, the CIA. James Comey is basically heading this operation. John Brennan is in support, providing assets, operatives, outside the borders of the United States to work their mischief. And in this case, one of the targets was a fellow by the name of George Papadopoulos. He's a campaign guy for Trump. Well, the people that approached George Papadopoulos to tell him, hey, you know what? You're a Trump guy, right? You know, you might find this interesting because I know a guy, see? And this guy has some friends who knows this guy that's got some stuff on the Clinton campaign. I know it's kind of convoluted. Stick with me. These are important people, and I can run you through them, and maybe you can find something of use to the Trump campaign. Well, there were people who fell into George Papadopoulos' orbit when he was outside the United States. And those people were a fellow by the name of Professor Joseph Mifsud, who works at a university in Italy that's pretty much set up for the intelligence community. If you want to get work in the intelligence community, you go to this place in Italy, and they apparently teach you how to be a double knot spy. I sent him my transcripts. So anyway, he works there, and he's from Malta. And then there is a man by the name of Alexander Downer, who is an Australian diplomat. And Stefan Halper, some pseudo-academic from the United Kingdom who has some femme fatale working with him that goes by the name of Azra Turk. So all these people are just kind of like coincidentally running in to George Papadopoulos with his story. Well, George Papadopoulos is not a stupid man, and he didn't fall for this. But it is these contacts with George Papadopoulos that we see the embryonic beginnings of what they were trying to do. Now, there's something you're going to hear about in the news pretty soon called Crown Material. Code name, government intelligence agencies, as you know, big on code names. Well, Crown Material was code name for the dossier, the Christopher Steele dossier. That is the pillar, the foundational document of this coup. And we've talked about the dossier. We're not gonna get into that again. We all know that this was manufactured. It's product. It's not real. And it's what was sold. It was the bill of goods that was sold to the FISA court judges or judge to justify the FBI spying on the Trump campaign. Now, what's come at issue with Crown Material, i.e. the Steele dossier, is the fact that one of the big questions that's been out there, but it's also one of the big questions that Attorney General Barr and no doubt John Durham, the prosecutor that Attorney General Barr has assigned to this, I want to ask, who pushed this whole dossier thing? How did this thing get injected into the bloodstream of this alleged investigation? Well, James Comey says, you know, Brennan was the guy who was pushing this thing. He was peddling it all over Washington, D.C. He took it here and he briefed these guys with it and he told them. And Brennan goes, nuh-uh, no, it wasn't me. No, that was you. You did that because you're the guy that went in and told the president that he wasn't under investigation when he was. So the fingers start getting pointed. And the yes, you did, no, I didn't. Oh, yeah, uh-uh, goes back and forth. But according to Trey Gowdy, who has seen these things yet is not at liberty to reveal them in detail, that his suggestion is that those people who want to find out the truth about this should look into the FBI email chains between James Comey and his various minions. Stuart, Kevin, Brandon, those guys. And find out, you know, what's going on. Because there is an email. And who knows, it may be confirmed by the time this goes to microphone and we talk about it. Because this is a few hours old. It was confirmed that there is an email chain. And in this email chain, James Comey is to have told FBI agents that it was Brennan who was insisting that the Crown material be included in the evidence presented to the FISA court. Brennan. John, you communist SOB Brennan. Have I mentioned that in 1976, John Brennan voted for slobbering Gus Hall, the Communist Party United USA's presidential candidate? John Brennan voted for him. And apparently, big old tall stupid Jim Comey did too. Remember that Crown material. So it was Brennan who was pushing this. Brennan was an Obama appointee, a devout and fiercely loyal Obama appointee, a dogged hater of Donald Trump. And again, we see, I don't know, if it's uncovered, is it fate? You know what I mean? If these guys, if the perpetrators of this coup, if they really are brought to justice, when this thing unravels, I think it's going to unravel at the level of Comey and Brennan and Clapper. I don't think that it will necessarily, rather than unravel at the level of Lisa Page and Bruce and Nellie Orr and James Baker, rather than unravel at that level, I think all that we're going to see from those people is rather confirmation, not implication. These guys are in it up to their neck. Everybody knows it. I think what we'll see and have seen, and as testimony is released, we'll continue to see confirmation of these guys' duplicity in this coup. think we've got time. Bill Whittle has some wise words on this. I haven't played much of his stuff in a while. Just haven't done so. But we have something here from him that I'm going to share with you. And I'm just going to shut up if I can find it. Yeah. It's called Fear and Justice.
You know, looking back on 10 years of doing these videos, the worst thing by far has been the slow, depressing, in fact, heartbreaking way that I've learned to correct myself when I'm speaking about my own country. I find myself saying, it's a free, this used to be a free country, or the Constitution clearly states, you remember the Constitution, don't you? Or that's just a red-handed, open felony. You can't get away with something like that unless, of course, you're a high-ranking Democrat or liberal celebrity, you know, those kind of things. I've been so heartbroken for so long that I find myself able to speak of freedom, our rights, and most especially the rule of law only in the past tense. Now, I remember parts of this ongoing process. I remember President Obama's brand new Attorney General, Eric Holder, publicly refused to prosecute flagrant voter intimidation on the part of the Black Panthers because, quote, I think it does a great disservice to people who put their lives on the line, who risked all for my people. I remember hearing that, and I said out loud, I thought we're all your people now, Mr. Holder. I can remember Nancy Pelosi saying that we had to pass the health care bill in order to find out what was in it. I remember Chief Justice John Roberts later ruling that the penalty provided for in that health care law was indeed a tax, and that if it had been called a tax at the time the bill came up, it never would have passed in the first place. I also remember that he didn't vacate the law on this basis. It was just something of passing interest to we history fans. I remember men dying on a rooftop in Benghazi, giving their lives for a government that had already canceled a rescue attempt, leaving them to fight for 6 or 7 hours, wondering when the good guys would arrive. I remember a filmmaker being arrested by 26 state troopers in the middle of the night and then spending a year behind bars for having made a film that Secretary Clinton and President Obama claimed was responsible for that catastrophe in Benghazi. And I remember Dinesh D'Souza doing 6 months in prison for an innocent and trivial violation of a campaign law that Democratic donors flouted with impunity and continue to do so to this very day. I remember the treasonous breach of national security set in motion by Hillary Clinton's arrogance, laziness, and corruption. I remember her lying to the American people on camera and then to Congress under oath that no laws had been broken and that no classified information had been sent. And I remember as the leader of the law enforcement agency formerly known as the Untouchables, see, I did it again, formerly known as the Untouchables, stood in front of the world's television cameras and spent 40 minutes confirming that every assertion that Mrs. Clinton made was untrue, that multiple felonies had occurred along with massive and criminal breaches of basic national security, but that no reasonable prosecutor would take the case. Yes, I remember exactly how I felt when I heard that news. I remember Brett Kavanaugh defending himself against the charges brought by a liar and a perjurer, assisted by a senior United States senator, in a last-ditch effort to derail the constitutional approval process for the Supreme Court in a desperate bid to keep hold of power for the Democratic Party. And I remember that Democratic Party's presidential candidate leaving her supporters literally standing out in the rain because she was either too drunk or too hysterical or both to perform the simple courtesy that marked every other presidential defeat in living memory. I remember her charge that she lost because of the Russians. I remember an investigation that was built on lies told by the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, another group of Americans whom I had formerly great respect for. I remember all of that, and so do you. I watched them all walk away, scot-free and smirking, and I've had to spend the last 3 years of my life explaining to my Russian wife that this country used to be different, that you used to be able to speak your mind without fear of being assaulted based on who you voted for, that you used to celebrate the opportunity to hear differences of opinion on university campuses rather than smashing windows and burning them to the ground in order to avoid having to hear any different opinions. And the hardest part has been trying to explain that there was a time not too long ago when a sitting president of the United States was forced out of office, rightfully forced out of office, for covering up some minor burglary back when there was some semblance of a free press that was duty-bound to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, regardless of what party they belonged to. But, a few days ago, I watched one of these deep state elitist determiners of what was best for the American people answer some questions about how the Mueller investigation started. John Brennan, who was instrumental in launching this slow-motion failed coup d'etat, was explaining how everything he did was completely legal and overseen by the FISA court the whole way. And I had two instant reactions to that interview. My first thought is that he's doing precisely what Hillary Clinton did when faced with her criminal email practices, namely assert and then reinsert that everything she did was strictly legal and had been overseen every step of the way. She was lying. I knew she was lying, you knew she was lying, and I knew Brennan was lying too when he said that the court had approved the surveillance of candidate Donald Trump, although it did take Trey Gowdy to point out to me what should have been obvious, namely that courts rule based on the evidence presented to them and have no way of knowing the information given to them is indeed factually accurate. And that's when I realized my second thought. He's scared. Brennan is really scared. Comey's scared too. They're all scared. They're throwing all the mud they can to convince the American people that Donald Trump is a tyrant and Attorney General Bill Barr nothing more than a political hack, which is pretty rich, really, coming from a peerless American tyrant and her retinue of political hacks. But for the first time in 10 years, I began to detect a whiff of cool, clean mountain air in this stinking, gangrenous septic ward that used to be a government. I sensed just the possibility, the faintest hint, that a clean gust of wind will bring the smell of actual justice into the room. Now, I don't allow myself to really get my hopes up, of course, not after what we've been forced to watch over the last decade or so. The logical part of me, the part that tries hard to stay grounded in actual, messy, disappointing reality, is saying that the best case scenario is perhaps a lancing of this festering wound with some iodine and bandages applied, something cosmetic and pointless as the infection continues to spread. But then there's the other part of me, the part with a broken heart, the part that, like you, has been fighting to try and save this patient, the part that understands that this will require massive and invasive surgery, that we will have to spend hours on the operating table, opening the chest cavity, cutting away all of the dead tissue, all of the tumors and the pus and the rotting flesh, the part of me that still believes that this patient can be saved, but only by the most skilled, aggressive, and drastic measures on the part of the surgeon, that this horrible wound could in fact be flushed clean with a saline solution and stitched and tightly bandaged with dressings that are changed several times a day, and that we would commence a long, tedious regimen of antibiotics to continue for a long, long time, resisting the temptation to back off on the drugs when things just started to look better. And then I put these two feelings, these two ideas together, and I realized that the surgeon in this life and death fight is not Bill Barr and it's not Donald Trump. The surgeon is you. The surgeon is me. We allowed all of this to happen. The patient entrusted to our care fell into critical condition on our watch. And the effort needed to save that patient, that idea called America, will be Herculean. So, are we up to this task? You and me? Are we?
Wow. And you know what? He's absolutely right. Do we have what it takes? Do we have the we got the right stuff to knock this out? To fix it, really fix it? I don't know. Time will tell. I like to think that we do. I like to try and accentuate the positive and think, yeah. But it is not going to be easy. It's going to be a fight. A massive cultural, ideological, spiritual, maybe even in some levels, psychological fight for that restoration. That's all the time we got. ACP's heard here live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We have a recorded version of the program at Mojo 50 Radio Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much for the opportunity to visit and talk about all this stuff. I appreciate it no end. We will be back on Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. I'm James Bostic. God bless you. God bless America.